This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with me, G. Thanks so much for joining the show. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk with Samara Hernandez. She is an incredible investor who's launched her own venture capital firm. You don't know what that is? We're going to explain it all to you. She's also a Latina, so one of the very few women of color that are looking to change business as usual. And by the way, she's under the age of 42. She's under the age of 40 as well. So talk about very accomplished, and I'm feeling like a big underachiever. Also, remember those color-coded chore charts that you had maybe when you were growing up as a kid, or you had for your kids or grandkids that you would put on the fridge with a magnet? Well, those days are gone. In a cashless society, guess what? There's an app for that to make sure that your kids do their chores. And it also ensures that your kids get paid and learn a little bit about how to take care of their finances. So that's all coming up today. But we're going to start the show with our very own WGN Radio and ABC News correspondent, Ryan Burrow. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, boy, what a day for Boeing, huh? They cannot win a news cycle. They just cannot win a news cycle. It's been like that since last year.
I feel like you're looking a little disheveled. Your hair, you're like...
Well, we've got whiplash because it seems like every hour there's new information coming out about Boeing. You heard Orion talk about some of the issues that they've been having with their stocks. I mean, yesterday alone, we saw that they specifically announced that the Boeing 737 MAX wasn't getting off the ground until at least midsummer. So, from one aspect, terrifying. Another aspect, you know, at least they've built themselves a little bit of space because we're doing like the slow drip, like, oh, maybe in two months. Then wham, you know, nothing until at least midsummer. We're talking June or July. So that's a pretty big deal. And what we saw yesterday was stocks just tumble like
crazy. We heard Orion mention this.
5.5%. Wow. They halted the trade of the stock. They brought it back. It was just temporary. They brought it back, and I think it finished the day down 3 percentage points. But Boeing stock is down 25%. Following the second crash. So they've obviously been struggling. And then we're starting to see a lot of the airlines follow suit now, knowing that Boeing is not planning on having their planes back up in the air until midsummer, starting to push back some of their deadlines. I just spoke with United Airlines. They have not changed the confirmation of their June 4th date. That was the one that they had initially scheduled. And they said they haven't done it formally yet, but obviously things are changing. So they will probably have to change that, in Southwest Airlines as well.
Wow. So a lot of fallout from this. Also, reports of numerous employees for suppliers for Boeing that have been laid off or furloughed, had hours cut. So a lot happening.
So you've got an entire line that's dedicated specifically to the 737 MAX, and they hit the red button. I'm symbolically saying that they hit the red button to stop production this week, because there's no point in continuing to make these planes if no one can use them and no one is buying them. Now, the thought is this is going to be just temporary. We'll do it for maybe 2 months. That was the initial thought by the suppliers, is that this is just going to be 2 months of us trying to figure out how we're going to get through this kind of dry period. But now that Boeing says they're not relaunching until at least midsummer, now they're looking at several months. So, yeah, big concerns about the supplies, the workers, everything that goes along with constructing these planes.
Well, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you expect the next steps are going to be?
Well, the testing is going to be extremely rigorous. First of all, they have to get recertified to begin the testing. Boeing does on the 737. And all our understanding is that they want to get the 737 back up. It's not going to be some other plane. They're not going to shelve this line at all. It's just too darn profitable. They want to get this thing back going again. So first, you've got to get the certification for testing. Then you've got to begin the testing. That's why they know this is going to take a much longer time than just getting a rubber stamp from the federal government. This is going to take literally hundreds, if not thousands, of test flights to get final recertification.
And the effect of the president criticizing Boeing?
It's not helping. The president today saying that Boeing is a big disappointment. Of course, he's been fighting for Boeing, especially against Airbus, which is manufactured and headquartered in Europe. And Airbus has just been getting paid like crazy, because obviously if you can't buy the 737, you've got to buy some other planes, and they've been turning to Airbus. They've been making a ton of money as a result of this, and that means that European business is defeating American business, so he's not happy with that right now.
Looking in my crystal ball, I foresee a very busy couple of weeks ahead for you.
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. And there's a lot of other stuff going on with the airline industry. When you throw in the coronavirus now, the search is there. We've also got these new, I don't know, you'll see today, the service dog regulations from Department of Transportation. So there's a lot going on.
Well, thanks so much to WGN Radio and ABC News correspondent Ryan Burrow, also an aviation expert.
Just today.
Really appreciate you being in studio. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. So excited to be talking with our next guest, Samara Hernandez. She is the founder of Chingona Venture Capitalist Firm. So excited to have her here. The more I learned about her, the more exceptional I found her story to be. Welcome, Samara.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about your venture capital firm.
Yeah, so Chingona Ventures is a venture fund based here in Chicago. We invest in early stage tech companies at the earliest stages, and we invest in food tech, future of work, femtech, wellness, with founders all over the U.S. We invest in all kinds of founders, but have a specific focus and commitment to investing in diverse founders and in founders that are creating industries that are often overlooked by traditional investors.
So if someone isn't familiar what VC means, can you just describe it in very basic terms? You're looking for cool innovations to invest in.
Right. So think about the next Uber, the next Airbnb, right? At the earliest stages when they had the idea or they had one car, one room. That's where I'm trying to go in.
Before we talk about how you launched your very own VC firm, let's talk about how you ended up in finance to begin with, because you have an engineering degree.
Right. So I got an engineering degree from the University of Michigan. And instead of going into traditional engineering roles, I started off my career on Wall Street at Goldman Sachs just at the beginning of the financial crisis. So it was an interesting...
Volatile time.
A volatile time to be in the markets. And I was in sales, where I was getting ranked every single day. On products that weren't performing, markets that weren't doing well. And, you know, we were out in the news every single day. So it really taught me about selling a product to a customer in a very unique and in a trusting way.
So how did you apply your engineering background to sales?
So you're always trying to solve a problem in engineering. And with sales, you're trying to solve a problem. You're not trying to pitch somebody a product. You're really trying to understand the customer, what they need, and providing a solution to that problem.
And I read that you were very innovative in terms of applying automation.
Oh, yes. So because of my engineering degree, there were so many things that were just backwards. You had to print out sales reports, or, you know, it took a long time to get certain numbers to our clients. And I was just like, well, why don't we just automate this? It was simple to me, but I guess it was innovative at the time. And so I used my engineering background to provide innovative solutions to making my sales process more efficient. And actually, that's what I do today. And I work with tech companies to help them do that in their work.
And then you must have really loved it, because then you went on to get your MBA.
Yeah, I went to Northwestern University, so stayed local. And I went to Northwestern. I actually didn't know if I wanted to get into venture capital. I didn't know if that was something for me. And Northwestern University gave me that platform to be able to do an internship at a fund locally and ultimately pursue a career in venture capital.
These are remarkable achievements, but when I think about your background as a first-generation immigrant, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, and I guess technically my son is a first-generation, because I immigrated to this country.
Oh, okay.
When I was very young with my parents.
How old were you?
Six.
Okay, I was 5 years old when I came to the country. So I love this is a true American dream story.
Oh, it is. And we talked about it briefly, but, you know, I didn't come immigrating, you know, with a great family income and a family business. We worked our way up the traditional immigrant story. So my parents had 2-3 jobs, and, you know, they worked as a maid, busboy. My dad would clean factories at night, right?
My parents were factory workers.
Yep.
So we weren't crazy rich Asians.
Right. No. And, you know, and it's inspiring to see that, because you have a different perspective. We have a different perspective. And especially when we go into industries where most people kind of look the same, have similar backgrounds, maybe went to these great schools, but didn't grow up, you know, having to translate for their parents, didn't grow up having to eat the same meal for a whole month because that's all they could afford.
So you didn't really grow up with the connections or even an introduction to the finance world, let alone the venture capitalist world. But, you know, where did you get this desire to then say, okay, I'm going to find, you know, I'm going to be the founder of my own VC firm?
Yeah. So I was actually going to be a hairstylist.
Wow.
Yeah. When I, because I worked at a hair salon in high school.
That's a great job too.
Right.
We're not knocking it.
Totally. That's a great job. But you know, I came to this country. I was in ESL until fifth grade and I didn't know, wasn't doing well in English, but in math, I really picked up really quickly. My older sister would come home and teach me her math skills. And so I advanced pretty quickly in math. My teacher put me into, a more advanced class. Some more advanced work. And that's what led me to engineering. And I think I was naive because I didn't know how hard engineering was, but I was like, hey, I'll give it a try. If not, I can always be a hairstylist, right? And so I did that. And then Goldman Sachs I met. I didn't know who they were, what they did, or how hard it was to get in. Again, being naive, I think. If I would have known how hard it was to get into all of this, I probably, you know, would have thought twice. And I think a lot of it obviously is there's luck, but always hard work. And I always kind of, I never knew what I wanted to do or what I was supposed to do, but I was like, I don't know what they're doing, but it seems really interesting and they're making money and they're really enjoying what they're doing. And so let me try that. Let me learn more about that. And when you put yourself out there, I feel like people really want to help you in whatever capacity they can. And I've had a ton of people that have just taken me under their wing, not knowing anything about me, but just saw that I was just so aggressive and such a hustler and wanted to make the world a better place. And I'm starting off with technology and investing in these really cool tech companies.
Were you ever intimidated?
Oh my God, all day long, every day. I have imposter syndrome. But you know, that's probably why I named my fund what I did, because if you have a name like I do of my venture fund, there's no way you can have imposter syndrome longer than 5 minutes.
And the name of your firm is Chingona Ventures.
Chingona Ventures.
And tell us what Chingona means.
Chingona is basically a Spanish from Mexico slang term that means badass woman.
That's fantastic. And what sort of startups are you looking for? What are you hoping to invest in? And how is what you look for different than what maybe other VC firms are looking for?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking for those one, you know, business types. So typically in the Midwest, there's a lot of what we call business to business software as a service companies that are building a business here and getting a lot of funding, right? And I saw a lot of consumer companies or business to consumer companies that were not getting funding here. They were going on the coast to get funding and becoming successful. And I'm like, I have all this deal flow, right? That's not staying here. And then I saw industries like female technology, right? Companies that are changing the way we think about fertility and how we have kids. And especially after having my own son, I just relate to it in a very different way. And a lot of VCs, mostly men, are just like, my wife wouldn't use it, or I just don't get it. And I'm like, that's okay, send it to me. And then and the thirdly is with founders that don't come from this background, don't have a safety net, don't have the financial means to get a what we call a friends and family round, where someone can write you a 50 to 100K check and get you started. So I'm essentially being that friends and family round for these founders that may not have access to this network of rich individuals or no institutional VCs that can get funding.
You've been able to capitalize on your unique perspective to see markets and industry where other people may overlook it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So what traditionally would you say? You say a lot of products that service women. What else gets overlooked?
Yeah. So I would say in the Midwest, a lot of early stage, at the okay. idea stage, pre-launch. So that's areas in food and consumer companies, right? There's funds that do kind of later stage. There's a lot of fintech, but financial technology, but focused on the underbanked.
Like, thanks for explaining that.
Yes, yeah, and the underbanked, right? So I just talked to somebody yesterday that's changing, creating a different type of student loan for low-income students. And when we were pitching, I was like, you don't have to explain to me what Pell Grant means. You don't need to explain to me.
Because you got it.
Because I got it, right? Because that's for the lowest income students. And so I can understand them in a very unique way and their customer base and add a different perspective.
So you're really a trailblazer. You're helping to really shift the traditional dynamics of what a VC firm looks at.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It's scary. It's freaking scary because you know what? There's a lot of VC in general. It's high risk, high return. But this is something that I'm passionate about. The founders that I invest in, and I hope to have them on this show, they are incredible. They are changing the way we live. They are changing who is, the way we go to school, right? The equity gender gap. And for me, that's something that, I just am fortunate that I found a job where I really enjoy this, right? But at the same time, I'm hustling. I'm going on the coast. I'm building relationships. And ultimately, it's my performance. If I don't perform, I'm not going to continue to be a VC. So there's a lot of pressure, but at the same time, it's extremely rewarding in who I'm investing in and the companies that will ultimately, you know, be the next Uber, be the next Airbnb. And it's going to be from Chicago.
So when you launch your own VC firm, you have to raise a lot of capital.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you go and ask people?
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. So you have to do your own pitch. So I fundraise myself.
What's the key to the having a great pitch?
You know, I think early on, just because you don't have a track record, and I mean, I have a track record from my former fund that, you know, that I worked at, but it's really just you and they're believing in you and your vision. And of course, I have data points around how many founders I talked to, where I would have invested, my portfolio construction, the whole thing. But really, it's up to me and my vision. And how differentiated is it? So there's a lot of people all over the world trying to raise their own funds. And it's very competitive. But I have early believers in me. And the Illinois State Treasurer's Office is the first. And I can't thank them enough for what they've done.
And what's the average size check that you're writing for?
Yeah, so super small. It's 100 to 250.
Okay.
And these are because they're raising $500,000 to $1 million. So that goes a long way.
Fantastic. So if you're listening right now and you have an idea for Samara, how do they find you?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter. I'm on www.chingona.ventures. There's a contact page. Twitter, Samara Hernandez, Samara M. Hernandez. And I guess I'll be on your website as well.
Absolutely.
So come to the website.
And we want you to come back anytime. We want to keep track of all of the investments that you're making and check back in with you.
Yeah,
so thank
absolutely.
You so much, Samara Hernandez. She is the CEO of Chingona Ventures. Thank you so much for being with us, Samara.
Thank you.
A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. G here with the Wintrust to Business Lunch. Happy Hump Day. Do you remember those old color-coded chore charts that maybe you had when you were growing up or you had for your kids, taped or stuck to the fridge with magnets to make sure that the chores around the house got done? Well, of course, that's a little obsolete. And I know you won't be surprised to hear that there's an app for that. And here to talk about this app that's great for kids to make sure that they do their chores is Greg Merced, CEO of his app called Busy Kid. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Boo for magnets and refrigerators. Ugh, that's,
you know,
old school.
Not only is that old school, but cash is old school. We're basically
know.
A cashless society now.
It's totally true. So that's exactly what we realized and noticed and thought, okay, piggy banks, stuff on the refrigerator, jars on the dresser, envelopes, forget it. We're throwing all of that out the window, and we're going to do this with an app.
And parents are so busy, I don't imagine they're going to have cash on them. And if they do, it's probably just going to be a $20 bill. And the kid's like, sure, give me the 20.
Oh, so many times have I done this exact thing, okay? I asked my son to wash the car. He washes the car. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, I don't have any money. I got to go to the bank. I got to the ATM, $20. Go to the gas station to buy gum to break the 20 to give him the 8. Ugh, if I don't, then I just stiff him.
Greg, let's talk about your credentials, because you've got some good ones. Not only are you a financial planner, but you also are a father to how many children?
Boatload of kids. six of them.
Six children?
Yeah.
What's the age range?
So we had a decade there where it was out of control. So it's 22 to 12.
Oh, so. Fantastic. So I imagine that you have dealt with every type of personality and every, you know, six kids.
I've got some battle scars, okay? I know what I'm talking about. I'm telling you.
So how did you come up with this idea?
So I realized all of that, right? Antiquated stuff is not working anymore. And then the most important things that you can get into your kids, I think, are number one, to teach them how to work. like work hard, not just sit on the couch and scroll, because that's not work, okay? So working hard and then being smart with your money. After, like, don't lie and don't steal, those are the most important things you got to teach them. And the best way to teach them these days is technology, because you, just like you said, money is invisible. So we have to change the way we teach. And so an app is the logical way to do it.
But Greg, had you ever developed an app before?
No, how did you? I had no clue. So Are you kidding me?
And of course, I'm talking to Greg Merced, CEO of this awesome app called Busy Kid.
Yeah. So I had no experience with that. I was a financial planner for 20 years and I thought, what the heck? We need to do this. And so, you know, you just do it. And it's been painful, but it's been good at the same time because you get to see all these people who are like learning this stuff. I was in New Jersey a week and a half ago and talked to a family with a little girl, 9 years old, and she's talking about the fact that she bought Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft stock. And I was like, what? This is what it's all about.
So Greg, we jumped ahead just
a little bit.
No, it's okay. I'm excited about this too. So how does Busy Kid work?
Okay. So think of it as your kid's first job with direct deposit.
And parents are the boss.
These parents are the boss.
Bosses.
Okay. So you boss them around. You give them a bunch of chores to do. Okay. When they do those, we keep track of it. And then we're going to send you a message on Thursday that says, hey, tomorrow's payday for your kids. Okay. You got to approve how much they've earned. And once that parent does the approval, it's like approve it, like the boss approving payroll. Boom, that money comes out of your checking account or your debit or credit card into our system, and then we divide it up into three buckets, saving, sharing, and spending automatically.
Wow, so you also have a sharing bucket as well.
Yeah, of course, it's part of life, right?
It is. It's important to give back and to teach that early. So do you have to have a bank account tied in with the app?
Yeah, so you have to have like a funding source, right? Because
okay.
Mom, dad, that's where the money comes from, right? There's no getting away from it. Sorry, but that's the way it is, right? So that funding source is what comes into our system and divides into that. And so in the save area, you can actually teach your kids how to buy fractional shares of stock. In the share, you can donate to charities. We have a whole bunch of them. And the spend, your kid can actually get their own reloadable Visa card, where they can transfer money onto that and go like swipe like the rest of us.
That's so smart because
Basic stuff.
Kids are buying online and so they wouldn't be able to use cash anyway.
Bingo.
The other really cool thing about this, Greg, is that you are making sure that the kids have to wait a certain period before they get paid, and that is reflective of adult life.
Real life, people. That's what we're talking about.
Because you have to budget for that week or 2 weeks before you get paid.
So and it's annoying, right?
Really a pain.
But that's reality. And, that is what Busy Kid's all about, is modeling reality. This is not some like app you're just messing around, you know, collecting stars and stickers and stuff like that. That's not what it is. It's like a utility. Like it's truly modeling behavior. It's like all of us as adults, we go to work, we earn some money, we save some, 401k or something, right? We share some with church or charity or something we care about. And then we spend the rest with a card. Like, that's exactly what we do.
The other wonderful thing about this is a catalyst to make sure that the parents and children are engaging in a discussion about finances.
Teachable moments.
Yes.
They're all over the place. When you really kind of release the power of technology and a family working together, you have those all over the place. You can talk about stocks. You can talk about charities that you want to give to. You can talk about, holy smokes, why did you spend so much on roadblocks? Like, holy.
Or video games.
Yeah, video games. You're spending how much on your own debit card? I'm glad it's your own money, but still, let's have a conversation about this. Not that that's ever happened to one of my kids, and I had to call Apple and get the charge reversed.
Because the truth is, this isn't really being taught in the regular curriculum at school.
No.
And so this is great. Tell me how much this app costs. I know you wanted to make it accessible.
Yes.
And also, tell me where I can find it.
Okay. It's super easy. Busy Kid. Right? Get your kid busy doing stuff and earning money and learning
lessons. B-U-S-Y-K-I-D.
Plain vanilla, Busy Kid.
Okay.
The app is free. The only cost is if they want a Visa spend card, $7.99 a year.
Okay.
So this is cheap. Okay. This is the best way, I think, that you can teach your kids about money that's invisible.
Fantastic. And you said we could find it at...
You can just our busykid.com or
any app
in the
finder,
app store, okay, on perfect. Apple or Google. You got
perfect.
It.
Greg Merced, CEO of the app BusyKid. Thank you so much for being with us. Next time we have you in, we're going to tap into your financial planning for adults.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Thank you so much, Greg. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hope you are having a fabulous Wednesday, and thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking with Seymour Ubell. He is an entrepreneur who founded a packaging company when most folks at that time would be thinking about retirement. Hi, Seymour. How are you?
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Look forward to speaking to you.
So what I found fascinating about your story is that you decided to found an entire new company in your 60s. That's usually a time when people are thinking about retirement.
Well, what happened was that I did retire when I was 62. And my wife came to me after 2 years of retirement, and she said, I married you for better or for worse, but not for lunch. And so the next day, I went to look for a job or find a new business to start.
You are a big proponent of not retiring and continuing to work. Why is that?
Well, I'm one of the lucky people in lifetimes who loves what he does. And besides, I love being around people, and that's the key, even if you retire. What makes me happy is getting phone calls from customers, speaking to them, speaking to my staff, and surrounding myself at the age of 89 with young people in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s, and they're all smart people, and it really gives me a great deal of pleasure at this time of my life.
Tell me about your company. How big is it, and how many people work for you?
Well, we have a very interesting company. We're a sales organization, and we manufacture shoe boxes and e-commerce boxes, and we're mostly in Asia. And we sell to Chinese factories from our factories that we contract to. We have about 100 employees, and we're in business 25 years. But all that said, as much fun as I'm having doing that, I'm also having fun doing other things in my life. I go to the gym every day. I read voraciously. In 5 years, it only happened lately, I've written 2 books, and that's filled my life with lots of good things.
You're saying that retirement for a second time is not an option for you, then, I'm guessing.
It is not an option for me because there's so much to do. For other people, I'm not against retiring, retiring from a job. But the one thing that people should never retire from is life.
What are some of the secrets to living an enjoyable life in your 70s or 80s? What are some of the keys and secrets to your success?
The secrets to my success is, I say this all the time, no guts, no glory, no risk, no reward. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
And by risk, you don't mean just financial risk. You mean other types of risks as well.
It's a multiple of things, G. It is the life of working hard, of making smart decisions. And one of the good things about being older is that you have something to all people out there listening. If you're in the 50s and 60s and 70s and even more, then what you have is what young people don't have. It's called experience. And all my team surrounding me have all that experience because most of them are in the 50s and 60s.
I wanted to ask, along those lines, was it easier to start a company in your 60s versus, say, your 40s or your 50s?
Well, it's not a question of easier. It's a question of desire. I started my company originally with very little money, and I was a salesman, and I sold, and I got somebody to make the product and give me the credit, and then when I sold it, I got the cash, and then I paid my supplier. So that I'm in a unique kind of a business. But, I'm not familiar with opening a grocery store or opening up a clothing store, but it takes courage and takes people who have confidence in you, and you have to convince them. If you have your own resources, then there's no problem. All you got to do is have an idea and go forward with it.
I'm talking with Seymour Ubell, who's a founder of J.C. Edwards Corporation. He's an entrepreneur who founded a packaging company. When most are thinking of retirement, he founded the company in his 60s. You are now in your 80s.
89, to be exact.
Okay, so you're about to enter 90. When is your birthday?
Right. My birthday is August 17th, and that's when I'll be 89. And next year, my family is already planning my 90th birthday party.
What do you guys have cooking for that party?
I don't know. They don't tell me. It's my children and my wife are planning it. So I guess they're going to have, I don't know. I really have not a clue because they're keeping it a big secret.
Well, it will be a nice surprise. Mm-hmm. So have most of your friends agreed with your plan and method of not retiring?
No, they haven't. I am, and one has. I am one of eight guys who grew up together, and we all were successful in business. Four who retired are gone. The other two with me are working and we're still around in our 80s, and I'm the oldest.
And you're still working, which makes your wife very happy. Thank you.
That's right, and I am in my office right now as we speak.
Well, fantastic. We'll let you get back to work. Thank you so much for taking a little time out of your day to speak with us. This has been Seymour Ubell, founder of J.C. Edwards Corporation, and you're also a novelist. One of your books is named The Birth Mother. What's the name of your other book?
A Life of Risk Taken, and part of my philosophy, that those who don't take risks don't get rewards.
Well, thank you so much, Seymour, for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.